Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the news of the day. And our first story we're going to be talking about is a lifeline that has been thrown to the South African government by the EU. Before we get into the details of that, I think it's just important to go over what South Africa's trade relations are like in the world. We've been talking a lot about trade and dependence and interactions with other countries around the world. It's often said that the largest trading partner of South Africa is, in fact, China. And if you separate all of our export partners in 2023 out by country, then China is indeed the largest. About 12.3% of our trade is done with mainland China. And then if you include Hong Kong, that goes up to about sort of 14% or so. Second place is the United States. We're usually in the third place, actually, rather than the second place, at 8.3%. Third place is Germany with 7%. Fourth is actually Mozambique in 2023 with 6%. Japan at fifth, United Kingdom at sixth, India at seventh, the Netherlands at eighth, Botswana at ninth, and Belgium at 10. You may notice something from all of that, which is that if you take the European Union member states together, they actually account for about 17% of our total trade and are a significant number of our top 10 biggest export partners. They are much larger as a trading bloc than even China plus Hong Kong, than the US, than Japan. And if you include the UK, which is, of course, no longer part of the EU, but especially when it's under a Labour government, has a sort of similar inclination in terms of geopolitics to a lot of the EU, you get Europe's trade with us as being around 22% of our total trade, which is quite a lot. And it means that they're actually our biggest partner. So it's very important when something like this happens. And the story we're talking about today is that the European Council President Antonio Costa, the European Council is the sort of political direction and priorities body within the EU, but it doesn't actually make the EU laws or negotiate the agreements that's done. A lot of the EU is run by bureaucrats rather than politicians. But nonetheless, this is still important. European Council President Antonio Costa said on X that he had a phone call with Cyril Ramaphosa, and he extended the EU's commitment to deepen ties with South Africa as a, quote, reliable and predictable partner. He's expressed the EU's full support for South Africa's leadership of the G20 and its ambition to strengthen multilateral cooperation, as well as the Pact for the Future to address the most pressing global issues. Ramaphosa, in response to the same phone call, said that South Africa and the European Union share the same values of democracy, human rights, dignity, and equality, and that Ramaphosa looks forward to working together with the EU in ensuring a successful G20. So it seems to me, Herman, this is clearly the Europeans see a trade war coming with the United States under Trump, and I think they're trying to cultivate friends around the world. They're also just generally always been quite soft on the ANC. The EU is, in a lot of ways, less picky about some of its partners around the world than the Americans or have been, I think, in the past. They have a lot of investments in Africa. I think Africa is the biggest trading partner with the EU as a whole, or rather, Africa's biggest trading partner is the EU in general. So what do you make of this? I still think there's a big weakness here, which is that the Americans only need to point to the ANC's continued hostility to everyone in the Western world to perhaps start undermining this alignment. What do you think?
I think it is critical for the EU to understand what the National Democratic Revolution is and understand that the Americans have historically a bit more freedom on African matters because they weren't really a colonial power here. They had some interests here, you know, towards the tail end of the colonial era, but they were never a colonial empire in the sense that Spain, France, the Netherlands, and of course the British were. Portugal, of course, included. So the EU carries a historic grievance and guilt of its own making. It sort of feels paternalistically bound to Africa for its guilt, and I think that still colours to a large extent.
Yeah, you can see that, for example, in how the EU funds the African Union to a large extent.
Exactly. There's this noblesse oblige thing from the EU. So I think it is partly they see a trade war coming. I think it's partly their own blind spot in sort of being unwilling to make edgy calls that America could make. And then thirdly, I think there is just the good old flavor of what Trump says must be wrong, so we'll say the opposite. I do genuinely think that there's an idea that there's virtue to be won from, you know, pissing off the American president at this stage. So that's certainly what Vincent Mangwenya, or whatever the spokesperson for the presidency in South Africa, says, you know, where he just goes casually insulting the American foreign policy establishment. So I do think the risk of the ANC just going, oh, thank you for the support, by the way, you're also a colonial capitalist imperialist oppressing power, pay up, is enormous. They've done it before. I mean, I remember a few years ago, it might have been even under Mbeki and again under Zuma, there was this thing of our government insulting, or the ANC insulting, France, the Netherlands, the Swiss, you know, the Germans, all just in one go. And the Europeans seem to be very forgiving on that score. And I don't think that's necessarily right. But of course, if you're America, you are the silverback gorilla. You can throw your weight around, and the EU sort of needs to figure out where it wants to land. There's, of course, the risk of being too pro-American. There's the historical example of Ludwig Erhard, who followed up Konrad Adenauer as the Chancellor of West Germany, who was so unapologetically and unambiguously pro-Eisenhower and pro-America that the Americans didn't take him seriously at all. They just knew whatever they did, Erhard would bring West Germany along, so they didn't need to woo. And that's the problem with international diplomacy and geopolitics, is you do need to be a bit of a mercenary. You do need to play both sides off against each other. And Erhard didn't do that because he was so clear about his pro-Western, pro-American ambitions. And the problem with the EU is they need to figure out not just how to be not too pro-America, but also not too pro-South Africa, because South Africa isn't the Mandela country it used to be. We have ties with Hamas, we have ties with Tehran, unnecessary ties that might become just as damaging to the EU as America fears.
So this is, I do think that this is actually a point that the EU may actually awaken to in the next couple of years, which is why I say that this lifeline should not be taken for granted. The EU, especially if its relationship deteriorates with America, is going to have to, and I think it is slowly moving in that direction, although in the EU everything moves slowly sometimes, is moving in a direction where it's going to be a bit more perhaps assertive on some issues. And in that world, where South Africa is destroying property rights and cozying up to entities, I think the EU has recently started to pass sanctions, joining the Americans in getting tougher on Iran. You know, these kind of contacts that South Africa has are going to weaken our position. So, you know, once again, the sort of idea that South Africa is going to shift to being aligned with BRICS is just kind of rubbish. If you look at where we're exporting our stuff to, China, okay, that's a big one. That's a real trading relationship we have. But then the next BRICS partner is at 7th on our list of trading partners, which is India, with about 5% of trade. And then the rest of the BRICS partners, you know, I think the next one is at like 11th, which is the UAE. I think they're one of the new members of BRICS. I may be incorrect on that one. No, but yeah. Anyway, point being, we're still oriented economically towards Europe in particular, SADC, and also the US and China kind of competing for the next two spots in there. So just kind of trying to sort of dam all the waste at once is not going to be a very successful foreign policy, especially in the short term. And I think the fraying relationship with America is a great example of that. Okay. Let's go on to our next story. This one is about the Expropriation Act again, I guess. And that is that the DA is going to court on the Expropriation Act. There was a video put out, I think, yesterday by Helen Ziller, saying that she was at the Western Cape High Court challenging the constitutionality of the Expropriation Act. She said that the legal challenge they have is seeking to strike down the entirety of the law and not just focusing it on that section, which would result in it having to be presumably sent back to Parliament if they win to be considered, or at the very least, this is going to go to the Constitutional Court at some point. There are going to be other court challenges to this law, but it does seem that the DA is getting stuck in. And Herman, it does seem that after that weird statement put out by Steenhuisen a couple of days ago, where everyone sort of said, wait, is the DA going soft on expropriation? It looks like Zilla, I think, is trying to push back on that narrative and say, no, no, we are still fighting this. What do you make of this story?
Well, I think it's definitely, we've seen since Wednesday last week, we've seen something of a message recovery from the DA, from what by all accounts appears to be a wobble in its position on expropriation without compensation, that there wasn't a fundamental shift, but that there was a shocking miscommunication on the party's position that, you know, just led to, I think, outcry and former DA voters becoming quite angry and quite vocal about this. Now, the first step in any political crisis is not to panic. You can't panic. Panic makes you short-termist. It brings awful decisions. So I think it is sensible for the DA to say, look, let's not try and argue our way out of this mess. Let us action our way out of it. Let's go to court. I think that's fair. I think it's sound political strategy. It's not without risk, but it is the best thing I think they can do. And if you look at Zilla's statement, it certainly contains many of the salient points that the IRR has been making since 2018, the internal contradictions on the law. You've got Section 8 and Section 19 not being clear about what the role of the court is, at what point a court order needs to come in. But then you've also got the shocking process of public participation. Two of the nine provinces didn't even have proper mandates to vote in the National Council of Provinces on the bill. We've pointed that out. Anthea Jeffrey, our colleague and head of research at the IRR, made an extensive petition to the president on the bill's unconstitutionality at the bill at the time, now the act. So really, the two grounds on which the DA is challenging this thing in terms of internal contradictions and unconstitutionality through lacking process are solid, solid grounds with which the IRR agree. And I think the nil compensation issue, which the DA isn't touching on for tactical legal reasons, I can sort of understand that the IRR, Saul Kalicha, Afriforum can perhaps attack that angle. The DA is trying to move swiftly here, regain their footing on an issue that used to be just a sound basis for the party that, you know, was thrown into doubt unnecessarily last week.
Yeah, and I was worried for a second that the intrusion of American politics into our politics had made everyone lose their minds. But thankfully, it seems like sanity is very much restored. All right, let's speak about another party that's having some problems, and perhaps much bigger problems, I think it's fair to say, than the DA, and that is MK, one of the most famous and publicly sort of facing members of MK is Jacob Zuma's daughter, Zuma Sambudla, who is running afoul of the new Secretary General of the MK party. She went to, you know, she's recently been charged, I think, with terrorism or attempted terrorism or something like that. In we talked about, I think, a couple of weeks ago on the show. And she's been fighting now with Floyd Shivambu, saying that Floyd was not running the party correctly and that he was incompetent. She then went on X and tweeted, "Floyd, I'm not scared of you. Tell your minions to F off, bloody newbies. F you, Floyd. Worst thing to happen to the MK party. MK may expel me for my actions, but I'm okay with that. They will expel me tomorrow. It is well within my soul. Floyd is useless." So since she's tweeted that out, the MK party's official structures, their spokesperson has said, quote, "Such actions are unacceptable, divisive, denigrating, and offensive. They undermine the principles of unity, respect, and discipline that are the fundamental values of Mkhonto Sizwe party. Apologies must be made immediately. After this, an internal disciplinary process will be initiated in accordance with Mkhonto Sizwe's constitution, code of conduct, and all relevant prescripts." And if she doesn't apologize, they basically said they're probably going to kick her out. They said summary termination of Commander Duduzile Zuma Sambudla's membership in Mkhonto Sizwe and her recall from all party responsibilities. Man, MK is just kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
Most definitely. And I think part of the situation here is not only, of course, can we look at the financial difficulties that quite the gift that keeps on giving. Not only do we know they're in financial dire straits, but also we're seeing sort of this sort of personnel drama play out. And Nick, I think it was you who warned me that we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't overestimate the potency of MK as a political party, because they are essentially just a bunch of political troublemakers and rejects. It's sort of a bit like the usual suspects coming together for a reunion. It's not going to end well if you have, you know, warlords, mafias, corruption favorites. You know, it's not what you would call a peaceful bunch on which you could found a coherent and stable political party.
It's essentially a political party made almost entirely out of people who couldn't get on with anyone else in other political parties.
Yes.
And it's, you know, as a sort of, it's like a net that collects everyone who has been kicked out of another party in the country. Everything from Peter de Villiers from the what they called Good Party to yes. Zuma got, you know, kicked out of the ANC. It's just, this is Floyd. A huge list of people. Floyd, who's left the EFF. So it's no surprise that if you put a bunch of people together, all of whom had difficulty getting along with other people in their parties, it's not terribly surprising they're all going to fight with each other.
And the thing to keep an eye on, if we, and the real indication of MK's stability as a political party will probably be stuff like by-elections, because that tests your boring logistics, your day-to-day management of party structures. That'll be the indication as to whether they're a serious party. If MK collapses, I think it'll be good for South Africa. I think they are this destabilizing force. So, you know, watch this space. I certainly am enjoying it. And, you know, never interrupt your opponent when they're making a mistake. And they seem to be making a lot.
So not to extend this too long, because we're already a bit over time, but I do unfortunately think that there will be a space in our politics always for a party that is like MK and like the EFF. So both of those parties have serious internal problems at the moment. And I think the ANC is primed to benefit from that. But I do always think there's going to be a space for that kind of radical, over-the-top, race nationalist, sort of destroy everything, nationalize everything, kill everyone kind of approach to our politics, unfortunately. And I think it may be interesting to watch, you know, when Jacob Zuma is no longer the leader of MK, you know, because he steps down or passes away, or if Julius Malema is not able to hold the EFF together, what comes next? Will they amalgamate into some sort of new party? Will there be a new party that sort of springs from the earth and then competes with them, and then there'll be three far-left parties? I think that's actually quite an interesting question. Will the ANC be able to absorb them? I don't think so. There's a reason all of them left the ANC, which is that they couldn't get on together. So and what are your thoughts on that very quickly?
I think looking at the data model I built to assess the party political support levels during the election campaign, what you see in the data is exactly what you're describing. There's a 10% chunk of the electorate, not of South Africa, of the electorate, that divides their loyalty on a shifting basis between the ANC, MK, and the EFF. In July 2023, at the height of the EFF's 10-year anniversary celebrations, they united most of that 10% on themselves, really at a great moment of momentum. Fast forward to the elections in 2024. By the time of the elections, almost that entire chunk of that 10% had moved to MK. So that is the 10% that had, that danced, the radical dance with these three parties. And it truly is interesting to see where they go.
Indeed. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope that you have found this show interesting, and that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.